Good to see everybody. We got a good crowd already. It is, again, ready to go to Detroit River. So let's jump right into tonight's summer. I don't want to waste any time because I'm really looking forward to the tournament topic. I got a few things I want to talk about. So tonight we're going to talk about Detroit River gear. And let's start with kind of the most basics, right? Rods, reels, and line. That's pretty simple. You know that I like a short, stiff fishing rod for fishing Detroit River. We designed this rod for Denali. I think we're going on 7 or 8 years now. 6.5 foot medium, or 5.5 foot medium heavy, very, very, very short fishing rod and a very, very stiff fishing rod. Now, why is that a big deal? The short rod is important because you have to understand that when you're trying to stay vertical, if you're watching your line above the surface, that's not where you want to watch it. Remember, the fastest current in the river is the top 6-8 inches. So you want to be able to see your line underneath or below that top 6-8 inches and make sure you're vertical from there down to your jig. Way to do that is to have a rod close to you. So with a 5.5 foot rod, and again, we want to hold it forward of the reel. I'll give you the best tip I can give you tonight. If you're holding your reel like this when you're vertical jigging, you're missing a lot of bites. Take your hand off the reel, bring your hand forward of the reel so the reel is behind your hand, index finger on the rod blank, middle finger on the line. You're going to feel a whole lot more. So being able to see that line underneath that top 6-8 inches of the surface current is important. Short rod makes it easier. Stiff rod is important because remember, there is no horizontal movement when you're vertical jigging. The jig is just going up and down. A lot of times, while I'll grab that jig, suck it in, spit it out before you even know that it's happening. So it's important that you're able to feel that stiff rod. Remember, the softer the action of the rod has to load up before you actually feel a bite. So soft action rods are much less sensitive than stiff rods are. So short stiff rods are what we want to go with. Reels, a lightweight reel, you know, right around 8-9 ounces is perfect. This is the reels I'm going to use this year. This is the PC Fun Honor XT. Pretty excited about these. Great drag, a lot of adjustment in the drag, pretty solid drag. And the thing that I really liked was it's got a very, very solid anti-reverse. So I'm not afraid to set the hook and the reel's going to spin on me. So pretty excited about these. They hold the right amount of line. I think these hold about 180 yards of 6-pound test. That's perfect. Now, I only put about 100, 120 feet of braided line on here. That's all I want. But I do fill it up with backing so it doesn't come off in coils. If you've got too small of a spool or not enough line, the line will come off in coils and it's hard to handle. So I like a little bit bigger spool, just put old monofilament for backing, and then I just put on about 100, 125 feet of a good braid. Now I use a no stretch braid, Sunline either SX1 braid in yellow, or this is the plasma braid in bright green. You want a bright fishing line. Again, we want to be able to see underneath that heavy current. We want to be able to see our fishing line, and a bright fishing line makes that a whole lot easier to do. So short stiff rods, good quality reel, good capacity, fill up with backing, and make sure you got a no stretch bright colored fishing line. Okay. All right. Let's talk about leaders. This is a question we get all the time. Leaders, yes or no? Sorry about that, a little dry in here. And the answer is no. I do not use a leader. I tie direct to that bright line. I don't think you need a leader. Even when the water was really, really clear last year, we tried leaders. That didn't help. You know, the few changes that we did make were a little different than that. But I don't think leaders make a big deal at all. If you put a leader on your line, use some kind of knot that ties it together. Don't use a swivel. A swivel breaks that connection. So you've got this really good quality stiff fishing rod. You've got stiff fishing line that's very sensitive. Put a swivel in it to put a leader. You might as well fish with an ugly stick and 60-pound mono because that's about the feel that you have. So no leaders, no swivels. Those are important parts of this. You shouldn't get line twists when you're vertical jigging. If you're getting line twists, the biggest problem or the biggest issue I see with guys getting line twists is they lift and they drop their rod on a loose line. They let their jig fall on a slack line. If you do that, you're probably going to get some twist. If you lift slow and drop tight, lift slow, drop tight, you're never going to get any twist in your line. You don't need a swivel. So avoid leaders, avoid swivels, tie direct. What's my favorite knot? Pretty simple. I use a Palomar knot anytime I can. If I can tie a Palomar knot with monofilament, braid, fluorocarbon, I tie a Palomar knot. That's my favorite number one knot, that's easy. If I can't tie a Palomar knot because I can't get whatever I'm tying through the loop, I use a uni knot. That's, again, one of my favorite knots. So I'm going to connect two lines together very quickly. I use a back-to-back uni, right? Just back, tie a uni, pull them together, trim them up, you're good to go. So I like a Palomar knot if I can, uni knot if I can't. Those are my two favorite knots. We talked about scent. We talked about scent a lot, right? Scent is really something I think we need to pay more attention to. Now, I believe, and I've always believed, that scent will never catch you less fish. But I've never been a big scent guy. Now, last year, we did some testing with the ProCure stuff. We fished some with, some without. We did some trolling with, some trolling without. I think it makes a difference. The colder the water is and the less active the fish are, I think scent is a big deal. Didn't think that way a couple of years ago, but the more I use it, the more I kind of go side by each, I think scent is a big deal. I like stinky smell. If I'm going to put a scent on, especially in the river, because that jig is moving so fast, I want it to be stinky. I'm a ProCure guy. You guys know that. Garlic Nightcrawler, garlic minnow, something that stinks. Trophy Walleye is another one. Those are my three favorites. I like those. On the lake, a little bit different. We'll talk about that as we get into summertime. But on the river, I like something that stinks. Garlic Nightcrawler, garlic minnow, or the trophy walleye are my three favorites. I think you need something that really, really, really kind of stinks, right? And don't be afraid to put it on, fish a little bit. If you pick your bait up and it doesn't feel slimy, it doesn't stink, put some more on. I think the colder the water is, and again, the less active the fish are, I am a huge believer in scent. The colder the water and the less the fish are active. So again, I don't think scent will ever cost you fish. You're never going to put a scent on and catch less fish. That's a promise. Okay, let's talk about kind of the business end of this. Jigs, plastics, and stingers. You know I'm a big jig guy. 3/4 ounce, 1 ounce, ounce and a quarter if you have to feel the bottom, especially in the back or the wind is blowing or deep water. I like a jig that's designed for current. This is our thump jig that we're working on getting available again to the public, but that's my favorite jig. If you have some of those, use those. Our good friend Roy Miller at Fat Boy Jigs makes a great jig. The guys at Lure Lipstick with that current cutter jig. Those types of jigs that have pointed noses and actually cut the current and stay straight, those are nice. You want to make sure you've got a line tie on top. Anytime you're fishing vertically, you want the line tie on top. And don't be afraid to fish big jigs. You're better off to be vertical and be able to feel your jig and feel the bottom. That is much better than fishing a lighter jig and not being able to feel the bottom. You have to stay vertical. You have to be able to feel the bottom. There's our good buddy Roy right there. So that's important. Plastics, I'm not a bait guy. I haven't used live minnows in quite a few years. But one thing I can tell you 100% true, the body shape that you use is going to catch you more fish than the color that you use. It's important to understand that each one of these bodies. So we've got our thump worm, and then we go to our jerk minnow, and then we've got our disc worm, ribbed worm with twister tail, and then you go up to like a cane thumper or a paddle tail shad, something a little bit thicker. But each one of those baits has two characteristics that make it either good or bad depending on the day. One is what we call the fall rate, how fast it falls back to the bottom. So you can imagine this skinny little worm with no water resistance, it's going to fall back fairly quick. And then the other characteristic is what we call the fall angle. How does it fall back to the bottom? So this really thin worm body, obviously it's going to fall fast and it's going to fall straight back down. So it's going to be going like this, right? That's kind of how the action is going to be. As we get bigger and bulkier, the bait, let me grab one without a hook so I don't stick a hook in my hand. As we get bigger and bulkier, it's going to fall slower and it's not going to fall straight down. It's going to actually fall back down current a little bit of what I call down current glide. So whereas a worm will go like this, this disc worm may go like this. So we've got a different fall rate and a different fall angle. You've got to get that right first and then experiment with color. So when you head out in the morning, you should have two or three different body shapes on everybody figure out the shape first, then work on the color. I promise you, that's more important than everybody having the same cut, same style of plastic in a different color. Get the shape right first, then work on the color. Those are pretty important things. Stinger hooks, I don't put a jig in the water without a stinger hook. You know, our stingers are, they're built with a removable loop. So we just open up the loop. That's what our stinger looks like. The loop goes over the jig hook. You pull it tight, and I let that stinger hang. So that's now the lightest part of the package, right? If you take your stinger hook and put it in your body or you put it in your bait, the fish still has to move all of this to get it in his mouth. If you leave that stinger hanging, we tie ours on 14-pound Berkley XT, so it's a very abrasion-resistant stinger. That's the lightest part of the package. So fish can suck that stinger without having to move all of this, right? So that's an important part of that, letting that go. Letting it hang there, that's a big deal, right? And you're gonna catch a lot of fish on stingers, especially right now when the weather is bad and the fish are kind of off a little bit. Stinger hooks are a big deal. Hey, as you get a little, you know, some days you get where they're just chomping. I still don't take the stinger hook off. I'd rather have them hooked on the side with the stinger hook and the jig hook in their mouth. I'd rather take an extra 10 seconds to get that stinger hook out of the net than miss the fish of a lifetime that just grabs my stinger hook. So I am a stinger hook guy all the time. That's just the basic basic rigging. That's the basic rods, basic reels, basic line, basic rigging that we use on the Detroit River. Kind of just a very, very basic vertical jigging setup, right? Important to get a good quality fishing rod. That's important. Get a good quality jig, right? You know, like I said, if you can find our thumb jigs, again, we're working on getting those back to market. The current cutter jigs from Lure Lipstick, Roy Miller at Fat Boy Jigs, those are the three that I would tell you. Those are three that I have in my box. Each one acts a little different, but all three of them are great at cutting the current, getting to the bottom. They actually fish heavier than they are because of the way they're designed. So they actually fish heavier, which lets you keep contact. And the biggest thing is, if you can feel the jig as soon as it hits the bottom, your chance of that jig hitting the bottom and rolling like a round ball jig does, now you're snagged, now you're hooked up, now your hook is getting on the rocks and getting dull. A good quality jig designed specifically for heavy current is going to stop that and let you catch more fish because you're jigging more and you're not as snagged as often. So a little bit of extra money to buy the right jig can actually save you money because you're not losing jigs. Leave your round balls at home, give them to a buddy you don't like. Stay away from round ball jigs. They're the worst choice in any situation. Okay. All right. Any questions? Who's got any questions about rigging for the Detroit River? Let's take a few questions here. A lot of stuff there. Anybody got any questions? John says, sure wish the river was 10 degrees warmer. Hey, it's going to get warm, John. Don't worry about it. Don't push the season. You know, don't get too excited. Mark Van Warmer, I'm sure, is heading down to Detroit to fish the Michigan Walleye Tour coming up this weekend. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. Any questions on the rigging, guys? Anybody got anything they want to add? Any comments? Anything you do a little bit different than I do? I know, you know, we talk a lot. How do you get unsnagged? That's a good question, Corey. So there's basically two parts to getting unsnagged. The first one is recognizing that you're snagged right away. Now, one thing I can tell you is, you know, I don't care if you catch a 6-foot sturgeon. When you're vertical jigging and you set the hook, right, what's going to happen is a fish is always, first pull is always going to be down. It's never going to go upstream. So remember, you're going downstream at the speed of the current. Once your jig is stuck, you're going to start to have line go out. Everybody thinks, oh, I got a big fish. He's taking drag. The minute your jig is not vertical, or when the minute you set the hook and the jig is not vertical, it goes upstream, you are stuck. That's the first key. The faster you get on it, the better, okay? So once you know you're stuck, the first thing to do is open your spool and let some line out. Don't pull. Pulling is the last thing you want to do. Instantly open up the bail, let some line out. I like 2 or 3 pulls of my rod to get some line out. I close the bail, I reel down, I get tight, and I snap my rod tip. That gets about 9 out of 10 out right away. Because most times in the river, you're not hooked on something. Your jig has been sucked underneath something by the current. If you pull, you're not going to get it out. If you just let it fall, the current will actually bring it back out. If that doesn't work, instantly point your rod at the jig, hold your spool, and just put pressure on it. More times than not, your stinger hook is going to break or your jig hook is going to bend. That's why I like 12-pound braid. I literally, guys, I'm down there 50 days in a row fishing 10 hours a day. I literally go through 3 or 4 jigs a year. That's all I lose. My customers use a little bit more, but I'm quick on getting, as soon as I know I'm snagged, getting that loose line, snapping it, and then instantly getting on it and giving it a quick pull. And more times than not, that comes out. So do not pull. That's the last thing you want to do. Mark says, do you use a snap or line to the jig? I tie direct with a Palomar knot. That is my, that is definitely my favorite. John says, ever use bucktail with your jigs? It's big down in Florida. Yeah, the problem with bucktail, actually, the advantage could be an advantage. Bucktail falls really slow, so it could be an advantage some days. I know there are guys who use hair jigs on the river. Chuck Mason, our good buddy from the clam team, he likes to use bucktail. Hair jigs, awesome. Yeah, I don't. There's no reason not to use them. I don't use them, but no reason not to. Thanks, Tyler. Royce says, you only use leaders when it's tourney time, just for speed to retie. Sunline Sniper. There you go. Any tips for boat control? Great question, Ken. Yes. Here's what I would tell you about boat control. First of all, understand you're trying to keep your line vertical in a circle about that big, about the size of a coffee cup. That's all the bigger your circle should be. If you get outside that circle, you're not vertical. The biggest key to staying vertical, there's two things. Number one, forget about the current, forget about the wind. Get your jig to the bottom and just remember to follow your line. Don't worry about which way the wind's coming or the current's coming. Just get your line to the bottom. Wherever your line goes, drive your boat to the line. If it goes to the right, drive your boat to the right. If it goes to the left, drive your boat to the left. Don't worry about wind or current. Just get set up. And the jig will tell you where you need to drive your boat. Second thing is make lots of small changes. This is why I'm a huge believer in the remote. You can control the remote a lot faster than you can the foot pedal. I make about 30 to 35 changes every minute on my trolling motor. I am constantly hitting the button, turning the prop on or off, more speed, less speed, left turn, right turn. I'm constantly moving. My motor is constantly moving, constantly, because it's a lot easier to get vertical and stay vertical with small movements than it is to get off and use a big movement to get back. So follow your line. Kenny, get your line to the bottom, follow it, and make lots of small adjustments. Boat control is a never-ending job. The minute you're vertical, get ready to not be vertical because you are not going to be vertical. Constantly, constantly, constantly fight. Okay? That's the biggest tips I can give you. Chet says, what time do the eels become food? Eels kind of show up in the middle of the river, basically right there around Wyandotte. They usually show up that last part of April, 50, 51 continuous surface temperature, not, you know, 50 degrees at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and it goes back to, you know, 44 in the morning. 50 degrees in the morning, 50, 51 in the morning, that's a pretty good signal. It's usually late April, early May. That's a pretty good signal that those silver lampreys are in the middle part of the river and they are ready to be eaten. That's something too. Kenny says, what do you think of using semi-stand-up jigs like an Erie jig? It hits bottom flat and does not roll. It does. The problem with a Erie jig or a stand-up jig is the line ties in the nose, so it doesn't fall completely vertical. Those are designed to be cast and either drug across the bottom or cast out and actually jig back horizontally. They're not designed to fish vertical. So that's, you know, I want a jig with a line tie on top when I'm vertical fishing. I want a jig with a line tie on the nose when I'm casting or casting and retrieving or casting, letting my jig move down. So great idea for casting, but not the best for vertical. Mike says he broke a rod on a snag Saturday. That means he had the rod bent this way, not pointed straight at it. That's an important part. Get it pointed right straight at it so there's no bend in the rod. I can't tell you how many times I got to run to the back of the boat and grab one of my customers and go, no, do not use the rod to get a snag out. Point the rod right at it so it's straight. Hold the spool. Let that pressure of that line come off. Okay. Snap it like a bow. That's something we do bass fishing a lot, right? You just kind of get tight and you just kind of snap it. But I like a little bit of line and snap it out. And then I may do that once or twice, Eric. Then as soon as I can't get it, I just hold it and pop it right out. So, hi, Tim. Thank you. Yeah, it was good. Good to see you. Yeah, it was good to be down there. We're going to talk about that in a second here. Josh says hair jigs are great early with cold water. And they are because, again, they fall fairly slow. So you've got a little bit bulked up jig. It looks a little bit bigger. And it has a very, especially bucktail, right? Bucktail traps water. So it's a hollow, bucktail is a hollow hair anyway, and it traps water. So the jig falls really slow. They are awesome. Just something I just don't do as a guide. If I was fishing with one or just myself and another guy, maybe tournament fishing, I would definitely have some hair jigs in the boat. Dances when you fish your non-round jig and you are moving at the same speed of the current. How does it cut the current? A feature on the bottom of the jig that keeps it from falling over? I understand, but not the shape. So the idea of the shape, the idea of this jig, especially our jig, right? So our jig is weighted, pointed nose. It's got cheeks on the bottom. We worked really hard. I think we are the only jig on the market that actually started from scratch. I think everybody else makes a jig that comes from a current mold that's already been made. I think we're the only people that spent thousands of dollars and years getting the jig right. So pointed nose, cheeks on the bottom. The beauty of this jig is when the water hits it, it goes over the nose, it hits the cheeks, and it actually tilts the hook up. So if you're tight, this is why you can't drop your jig on a slack line. If you're tight, that jig hits the bottom like that. You're going to wear the paint off the nose. It doesn't hit this way, so it's not going to roll over. So that design, the way the line tie is positioned and the way the cheeks are designed, that jig actually hits like that with the hook up. So if you're tight, pop, that jig will never roll over, right? By the time you feel a round ball jig hit the bottom, it's already started to roll because it's going to fall straight. So jig design has a lot to do with not being snagged. Jim says, if you have multiple people in the boat, simpler to have different body types. I fish by myself a lot. What would you recommend as an order to try? I would start, that's a good question, Jimmy. I would start with a shad body, number one. I would go to the discworm twice. If you said, Lance, there's a body shape you can't fish anymore, I'd never fish a worm again. Worms are probably the least effective body shape that we fish, especially for big fish. You do not catch a lot of big fish on a worm. They fall way too fast. Aggressive fish, lots of males. If you're fishing really quick, you want to just cover some flats. Worms are great. Worm would be my last choice. So I would start with like a shad body, right? Finesse minnow, that type of thing. Then I would go to a discworm. And then maybe after that, a worm if you had to. Worm would be my last choice for sure. Okay? The round jig is still catching resistance from the current pushing it backwards. Round jigs are, I just don't like them. Any advice on floating a bobber and jig down the river for walleye this time of year when you can't fish out of a boat? I don't have any advice because I don't do it, but I don't know why you couldn't. I know there's a bunch of guys that fish from shore and catch a lot of fish. So I would imagine a bobber with a jig just above the bottom would be perfect, Ron. I don't know any way that it would be bad. Again, I don't have any advice because I don't do it, but yeah, same thing, right? Just rig it up, put a slip bobber on there. Set the bottom so it's just above the bottom and let her float down the river. Jiggins, wait, no. Oh, Mike's got caught on the cleat. That's bad. Tips on keeping vertical while reeling in a fish? You really can't. That's part of it. So usually if I'm catching a fish, I'm reeling. I just tell everybody, my rule in the boat is this: if you can't feel the bottom or your jig is not vertical, don't try to find bottom. That's my key. If your jig isn't vertical, don't try to find bottom. Let me land my fish. Let me get back on the motor and we'll all get back to fishing. Because what happens, you get off vertical, everybody starts letting line out. Now you've got too much line. So, you know, the 15, 20 seconds, 30 seconds it takes to reel in a fish, you're not going to be vertical. Just hang on. Just hang on tight. Don't try to find the bottom if you're not vertical and we'll get you. So there's really nothing you can do while you're reeling a fish, right? Spot lock obviously doesn't work. I have used, if it's not really windy, I will use the heading lock on my motor guide. That keeps the motor headed the right direction. But then again, I'm kind of not drifting with the current. So, I just kind of, as soon as I hook a fish, I kind of make a quick adjustment with the motor to get me to where I think is the best spot. I drop the remote and I start reeling my fish in. So, and if I have to, right, I'll hold the rod and make a quick adjustment with the remote and then I'll, keep reeling. But the rule is pretty simple, Fred. You got to tell everybody in the boat, if you're not vertical, don't try to find bottom. Let me land my fish, then we'll get you back to vertical. Okay? Fred says, I always seem to lose the line and I have to come back. I boat flip smaller fish to not waste time. Yeah, we boat flip a lot of them too. If I can not use a knot, a lot of times I'll lift the fish and put the knot underneath it. So if it does come on, I catch it. But I try to keep fish out of the net if I don't have to. Johnson, everything you're saying is top notch. I'm still learning the drift, but the same concepts apply in saltwater pass with tidal currents. Got 10 grouper last time out on my thumb jigs. Hey, there you go. Like it. Roy says Dipnet sells a ton of casting jigs for sure. And that would be the place to go. I can't remember who asked me about. I think Ron asked me about fishing with about, if you want to catch fish offshore, the guys at Dipnet are going to get you dialed in for sure. Absolutely. So they're going to give you some good stuff. Okay. All right. That's about a half hour. Let's kind of call it right there. Let's wrap up our educational part tonight. Again, if you've got any questions, you can get us through the Facebook page. You can send us a email at teachingfishing@gmail.com. I saw somebody earlier ask a question about crankbaits. Not the focus tonight, but please send us an email, teachingfishing@gmail.com, with your crankbait question. I'd be more than happy to answer you in a day or two. I saw you needed a nice list to start. I'd be more than happy to explain to you the different kind of baits you need and why you need them. So shoot us an email, teachingfishing@gmail.com, and we will get you dialed in. All right, guys, we're going to be back talking about tournament fishing. Let's take a quick little break so I can grab some water, and we'll be right back to talk about tournament fishing.
Just the facts.
It's a fact that vertical jigging is a great way to catch fish in heavy current, and having the right equipment is the first step to being a good vertical jigger. Short, stiff, sensitive fishing rods are important. Short rods keep the line close to the boat so you can be sure you're vertical. And stiff rods allow you to feel that subtle bite when you lift or drop your jig. Using a bright, no-stretch braided fishing line also allows you to stay vertical better and lets you see those slight little ticks when fish aren't really biting aggressively. Team it up with a heavy jig designed for fishing in current, a plastic bite and a stinger hook, and you're all set to go catch fish this spring vertical jigging anywhere you've got heavy current.
Just the facts.
Okay, nice little wrap up there of what we did. That was kind of our intro video. You'll see that every, I think on the weekend we publish that, so you can kind of see what's coming up for Monday. Cool. All right, let's talk about tournaments. I want to talk about the National Walleye Tour was in town this past weekend. I got a chance to go down and see some of my buddies. That was actually very cathartic for me, very, very medicinal, if you will. I enjoyed seeing a lot of people I don't get a chance to see much because I don't travel anymore. But let's talk a little bit about tournaments. First of all, I want to ask you, are you a tournament person? Do you fish tournaments? And when I say tournaments, I don't mean $20 and a one-day derby. I'm talking at least, you know, two-day events, entry fees in the hundreds. I think it's not really a tournament unless if you don't cash a check, it hurts. I think that's my personal definition of a tournament, that if you don't cash a check, it hurts. So $1,200, $1,500, $1,800 entry fees, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 days of pre-fishing, 2 or 3 days of tournament fishing, that's a tournament. But tournaments are different things to different people. So do any of you participate competitively? I think competitive fishing is a great way to learn. I think it's a great way to be on a body of water with people who are faced with the same situations you are, and some have better answers than you do, right? And I think that's the beautiful thing about tournament. And you're going to see, right? People are going to weigh in their fish. They're going to tell you what they're doing after the second day. So it's important to see. I know Chet does. Chet loves it. Roy says he's thinking about it, going to try to move up. Hunter, I know Hunter does. I know Emma fishes tournaments. Tim, obviously I saw him this weekend. It is definitely expensive. John says no more interest in tournaments. Corey says he would if he had the money. Mike Wagner loves it. I know Mike Wagner loves it. Mike had a great tough first day and a great rebound second day. Proud of a lot of our guys, right? Mike Wagner bounced back. Matt Kersimer bounced back pretty good. Ali had an okay tournament. Boy, those poor guys, they just got beat up this weekend. Chris Cody fished his first one this weekend. Craig Nagy says, been there, done it. We got the hats and shirts to prove it, don't we, Craigie? I'm just curious if you guys did it. Jay says he loves it. John says he did hundreds of them, but he'll never do it again. I can see a time when I can get back into it. I can see not this year, but next year. I can see finding what I'd like to do is find a weeknight bass circuit in the summertime and actually fish, you know, those 3-hour weeknight bass circuits. I enjoyed that. I really did enjoy that. Jeremy says he loves competitive fishing, takes you out of your comfort zones. It does. It takes you to places if you do it at a level. It takes you to a place that maybe you haven't fished. Jason's fishing the Michigan Walleye Tour this weekend. I think, look, it was a huge part of my, I was bad at it. I was not a good tournament fisherman, unfortunately. I wanted to be. But man, the things that I learned, especially my, you know, half dozen years fishing the professional walleye trail, traveling all around the country, fishing different bodies of water, fishing different techniques, I have to learn whole new things, right? Boy, oh boy, I learned so much tournament fishing. So I do think, you know, if you've watched our Evolution of an Angler, there is a point where competitive fishing becomes your next step. If you really want to get good, because it does take you out of your comfort zone. It does make you fish conditions. Look at who would have went out last week and fished. Well, the guys fished tournament had to. They had to put in the time, put in the effort in that crappy, cruddy, nasty weather. So first of all, if you are here and you fish the tournament this weekend, my hat is off to you. I know what it takes physically, mentally, emotionally to do that, especially when the weather is crappy. Then you add in crappy weather and a tough bite and the stress of tournament fishing. My hat is off to all you guys. I can't tell you how much I respect you guys. So a lot of appreciation for the tournament guys. Eric says he did the Michigan Ontario Muskie Club out of Sinbad Saturday, 31 boats. That's nice. Tim says he likes meeting new people. That's the thing I liked about it was, you know, I just met some really, really cool people. Yes, Emma, the first time we met, we fished against each other, yeah, about 20 years ago. Might have been earlier than that because I think the first year I fished, I had the Crestliner, which would have been 98 or 99. And I don't know if he remembers this, but the first time we met at a boat ramp. And I had literally just gotten home that morning from a tournament. And I think we fished on Wednesday nights. I had just gotten home from I'd fished a tournament somewhere out west. And I was coming back and I had a couple seminars. I had just gotten back into town. It was either Tuesday. We either fished Tuesday nights or Wednesday. I think we fished Tuesday nights. So it was Tuesday morning. I had just gotten back into town. Couple hour drive that morning. And I had all my walleye gear still in about my tournament gear. So I see him. Take a net. He's in a basketball. I see him take a net out. His net's, you know, about this big and handle about this long. And I said, oh, can we use nets in this circuit? And he said, yeah, you can use nets. I said, well, if you're going to use a net, you might want to use a net. And I extended my tournament net that has a hoop about double the size of this table. And at that time, my tournament net was 16 feet from the end of the handle to the end of the hoop. I said, well, if you're going to use a net, you might as well use a net. So that's the first time that we really talked. So I wonder if he remembers that. Mark says gets all his friends fired up. Just love it. Nick says used to, but guiding is where it's at now. Beauty of guiding. I was watching these guys today. You know, they had 4 or 5 15-inch fish, and they're all depressed. I'm like, that's perfect. I'll take those. Different attitude when you're fishing tournaments. John says he has his weekly golf night where he goes to the golf where all old farts and no money changes hands. There you go. Dan says he'd like to try it. I think it would expose your weakness. It definitely exposes your weakness, you bet. Roy had a chance to get out and actually do some pre-fishing with a couple of the big names on the tour. I'm sure he learned a lot. Tuesday nights. Yeah, it was Tuesday nights. Jimmy said tried once, came in third, and the cost of everything, travel, hotel, gas, entry fee, 3 and 3 other guys lost money. It was exciting to do it at least. I remember Steve Krim and his partner, fourth in the Loot tournament last weekend. I remember I fished a PWT tournament in Bull Shoals, Arkansas, 120 pros. Only 10 guys caught a limit both days. I was one of them. Had a top 10 finish. I fished. My uncle Art traveled with me, and he fished as an amateur, and Art was driving home. And I remember looking at my check going, I just finished in the top 10 against the best walleye fisherman in the world. And I'm looking and going, if I didn't have sponsors, I would have lost money. And I'm thinking, man, I'm not going to finish this high very often. And if I didn't have sponsors footing the bill, I would have lost money. And that's when I kind of went, you know what? I think I'm going to concentrate on my guiding. So, yeah, it's tough. Chance is not a tournament fisherman, but I really enjoy fishing on different boats. to learn how they do it and soak up as much as I can. Always learning. That's important. One of the things I like here at Teaching Fishing, especially the Anglers Club, is guys working with other people. I saw a couple of guys going fishing the other day. I like that. Jay's going to be doing the Michigan Walleye Tour this weekend. Hope the bite's better. It should be. Looks like we're going to get a little bit of warm up towards the end of the week. That looks pretty good. Dennis Dolan, MWT Houghton Lake. I'm in. I like fishing Houghton Lake. I think I told you guys we were talking about Houghton Lake earlier. I've won more money on Houghton Lake than I think everywhere else combined. That was one of my favorite places to fish. Love fishing Houghton Lake for sure. So, all right. So let me kind of wrap it up with this. Did you guys watch this weekend? Did you pay attention to the weigh-in down in Detroit? Did you learn anything? What kind of stuck out for you? Mark C. Fish PWT as a co. Made it to the final of Mississippi River. Congratulations. That PWT was fun. I enjoyed that with the amateurs. And that was a really, really fun time of my life. I really, really, really enjoyed fishing that. But did you guys watch? Did you guys watch the live weigh-in? Did you kind of see that the guys were struggling? Did you kind of, hear, how they won, right? First place was Handlining. Paul George made a great comment about big bait, something we've talked about here at Teaching Fishing for 25 years, right? The colder the water, the bigger your bait should be, right? He's pulling 13s. He said 11s, 13s, and occasionally a Rapala 18 he was actually hand lining with. So I thought that was pretty cool. These fish are lethargic. Water's not very warm. They want a meal, and they want one shot at it. They don't want to chase a bunch of small minnows. They want one shot. So, bigger baits was where it was at and paid off for him. Lori says Doc Harper has a new walleye tournament this year. I think I saw a 3 walleye circuit. Michigan Walleye Tour has their 4 tournament circuit. So pretty cool. Bruce says, you fishing Canadian walleye this year? Yes, I am. Ron says, did one a long time ago on Lake Pepin on the Mississippi River, one of my favorite places to fish. And he says, then diapers and formula costs changed things. Yeah, it's funny how our life changes. I've never had a kid, so I've always kind of been the kid in the family in our marriage. But yeah, you have a kid, you take care of your kid, right? And I'm very thankful for my dad. My dad gave up a lot of fun things that he did until we were old enough to go with him, and then he took us with him. And but yeah, that's the way to be, Ronnie. You take care of your kid and let them kind of be kids for a while. Chris McCauley's in that right now. He's got his daughter is in volleyball, and he's given up some time to watch her, but man, that time is so valuable. It goes so fast, it's over so quick. You guys with kids, take care of your kids, spend time doing what they want to do, be part of their life. That'll come back to pay you in spades, I promise you. Chris said the cold temperatures made pre-fishing more work than normal. Oh, there's no way. Herb fishes a cove for 5 years, met lots of nice guys and fished lots of different water. I enjoyed fishing different water. I think Herb and I actually, we met. Did you fish the Lake St. Clair event? It would have been 98 or 99. Herb, did you fish that? I think we met there. I met somebody there, and I'm almost positive it was you. Jason says, watch the tournament results last weekend. Surprised how many guys didn't catch a fish either day. Not judging these guys are pros, puts my bad days in perspective. You're right. Sometimes it is, I don't want to say fun because it's not fun, but to watch people, and these are great anglers. You're talking about, Hall of Famers. There's a half dozen Hall of Famers fishing this tournament. There's guys who are going to be Hall of Famers, right? Jason Shakura and Bill Shimoda. There's guys who are going to be in the Fishing Hall of Fame fairly quick, right? And they struggled. And sometimes it's good to see people that are pros struggle, because it kind of, again, it does put your day in perspective when you have a tough day, right? It happens, right? I was talking with Ali today on the phone. We were talking, and he says, my feeling is, if you don't get skunked or you don't have a bad fishing day, you're either not fishing enough or you're only going to the right place at the exact right time. You're not fishing enough different bodies of water. You're not fishing enough different times a year, or you're not fishing enough. Because if you do it enough, you're going to have bad days. That just is what it is. So, all right, Herb. So I think we met. I got in a van. I got in a van to get some free candy. I can't remember who was driving. But we got in a van, like four or five of us amateurs went to dinner with a couple pros. Were you in that van? Because I think that's where I met you. Chris says he noticed that there's a national level volleyball tournament in Florida. Oh, man. Forrest says it's like watching pro golfers miss a cut. Yeah, or a, you know, or an 8-inch putt, right? So, yeah, it's just it kind of brings everything into perspective. So, anyway, I would encourage you. Kevin says handlining is an art that takes time to acquire. Yeah, you know, I pick on handliners a little bit here, same way I pick on bass fishermen. All in fun, all tongue in cheek, for sure. I have a lot of respect for handlers. I had a couple of good buddies who are great, and it's funny to watch the guys who are good at it and watch the guys who just kind of put handline reels on their boat because they think they're going to need it. Handline, I've done it twice. Handline with two of the best guys on the water, Keith Critch, God rest his soul, from Lake St. Clair Walleye Association, took me out the first time, and I spent a little couple hours with my good friend Paul Doty. Two of the best at it, and man, the art and the finesse they have in controlling the boat and keeping that lure right where they want to keep it and keeping the speed exactly right, and you know, working, you know, on the half foot on their leads to get their leads perfect. Man, there's an art to it. I have a lot of respect for people who are good at it. Kurt says tournaments can be the highest of highs and the lowest of lows. You bet. That's 100% true. Keith says, if you haven't been skunked or done bad in a tournament, you haven't fished enough tournaments. You betcha. Always got to learn something, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. Tournaments are a learning experience. Again, you're in a pool of a bunch of people with the same conditions. Some guys figure it out, some don't. Pay attention to the guys who do. Roy says, I think a lot of the guys had a hard time picking up handline, and you can't learn from YouTube. No, you don't. You got to be out there to do it. Cody says, do you think it was the water temperature or the water clarity that gave people a tough time? I think it was the water temperature. Water temperature dropped a little bit. Barometric pressure dropped a little bit. The fish are kind of in that early pre-spawn, mid-pre-spawn, kind of in that phase where they're really grumpy anyway. And then you add in cold temperatures. You add in a little bit of dirty water. You add in unstable weather. You add in snow. You add in below freezing at night. A lot of factors kind of contributed to just a tough bite. So just one of those things. So, okay. All right, let's wrap that up tonight. Appreciate you guys joining us. That was a fun little conversation. I enjoyed tournament fishing. I would encourage you, if there's a tournament around where you fish, to watch it and pay attention to what's happening, because you might learn something. Kevin says he makes charts with note comparisons of all the handliners to find common. That's right. So you get a bunch of notes from five or six guys. There's a couple things that they all do the same. Those are the key factors that you need to concentrate on and get right. All right, let's call tonight. I hope you guys have a great week. I'll be heading down to Detroit Thursday morning. We'll get started on Friday. Pretty excited about that. So stay tuned. We'll give you a fishing report. It'll probably be recorded because I'm still in Facebook jail. I can't go live. So we will probably go recorded fishing report. It'll be on the Lance Valentine Sport Fishing Facebook page and then shared probably over to here. So anyway, all right, guys, don't forget Teaching Fishing Anglers Club. Great topic this month. We are talking about Detroit River tactics. We're going to talk about vertical jigging. We're going to talk about casting jigs, casting glide baits. We're going to talk about trolling, something that's overlooked. And I'm going to give just a little general overview of handlines. We're going to talk about the five techniques that I think you need to be successful in rivers, no matter where you fish rivers in the walleye world. So that's the Teaching Fishing Anglers Club. You can go to teachingfishing.com, click on the Anglers Club, click on join. Remember, because everything is recorded and everything is archived, if you join today, you have access to everything we've done this year. So it's not like you start in April and you miss the first 3 months. You can go back and watch everything. Remember, every month we have exclusive content for you guys and a live question and answer on a topic we don't cover here. If you've got a question, I saw a few questions tonight that were kind of off topic, please send them to teachingfishing@gmail.com. Myself or one of our staff would be more than happy to get back with you. We want to make sure you get the right answers. Check out our website, teachingfishing.com. Click on the public lounge. There's lots of good videos there that may answer some of your questions. A lot of blogs, a lot of articles. We run, I think, 7 or 8 pages of articles, about 40, 50 articles on there that we've written that could answer some of your questions. So check those out. All right. Prediction before I go. Chad says, Kansas or North Carolina? My gut says Kansas, but my heart says North Carolina is on a roll, and I think beating Duke was the springboard they're going to need to win. So I'm going to take North Carolina by 4 points tonight. All right, guys, we'll see you back here next week for Coffee Hour Plus. I'll be down in Detroit. We're going to try to get all of that worked out, get the bugs all worked out. But we'll see you guys next Monday, Coffee Hour Plus. Thank you for the guys behind the scene. Emmett, thank you for the great work tonight. Thank you, folks, for joining us. Check us out at teachingfishing.com. We'll see you next Monday night back here for Coffee Hour Plus. See you guys later.